This episode of the Two Fat Expats is brought to you by the Shangri-La Doha. To book your next stay, go to www.shangri-la.com/Doha. In our little expat street,
our house, we've only lived here for 6 weeks.
Our house, I still can't find the telephone.
Our house, and I still get lost driving home.
Our house, the rent costs more than my first car.
Our house, and it doesn't have a bath.
Our house, in our little expat street,
our house, but it's full of GNTs. I'm not sure if my ending was as good as it should have been, but you get the drift.
Everyone gets the drift.
Hey, says season 2, episode 14.
Yes, I am so excited for this episode. Can I just tell you, real estate for me is like porn.
Oh,
I am so, I don't even know if I'm allowed to say that word anymore, but I am so excited. Do you know, because growing up, my dad, his hobby on a weekend, if he's not playing golf, he's going to open houses just to have a sticky beak. Yeah. He's the biggest sticky beaker in the world. And so I grew up doing that. Like if there was a house for sale on the street, we'd always go and have a look. And it's just kind of like I could spend hours on real estate websites all over the world. Like I'll be watching a movie and if it's set in Portland, Oregon, I am straight onto realtor.com and having a look at houses just for giggles. Yep. I love it.
Jimmy, isn't that interesting? My husband is exactly the same and he says the same thing, that he thinks that he's like that because his parents were like that, because they were expats who then moved back to Australia and all they did every weekend was looked at houses because, yeah, you know, they were never quite sure if they had it right, or maybe they should have moved in closer, or maybe they should have gone there. And they had this real, they loved looking at houses and they took the kids. And he definitely, same thing, he is always looking on realestate.com.au and yep, always loves to look at real estate in different places.
I love it. I'm so excited for this episode.
This episode, I think, says when you hear the interviews, there's some crackers. Like there's a lot of issues with expat housing I definitely hadn't thought about as someone who's been an expat for 16 years. There were some surprises. And I learned a lot.
Oh, well, so did I, because after reading all the comments on the Facebook page, I was just like, oh, wow. Do you know what I mean? Like I really learned. And a lot of things actually made sense to me when I've been doing my research. Well, not really research, just when I'm having a snoop around different properties around the world, as you do, things now make sense to me.
Yes. Well, I know because Matt works for a German company, yes?
He does. And I think we're going to be talking to a lady who lived in Germany, correct?
Yes. So I imagine, yeah, this is going to be really interesting for you.
Yeah.
And, yeah, yes. I bet it...
In a few years, we may very well be moving to Germany. Not sure, but it's definitely on the card, so I'm very eager to hear this.
Yeah. Well, maybe says if we both talk about what our own real estate situation is with mm-hmm. our expat lives. And so what happens with you? I know you and Matt were sort of married in Sydney, but where do you have a house?
So we are both from Sydney, and at the time before my parents moved outside of Sydney, we grew up sort of 10, 15 minutes apart, so really, really close. And then Matt was transferred to Melbourne, and that's when we thought we would buy our first family home, and we had no idea that within 2 years we'd be moving to the Middle East. It wasn't even on the radar for us. And that's the house we were living in when we got engaged, where we got married, where we brought Sadie home from the hospital, where she lived for about 2 weeks before we moved went back to Sydney temporarily before moving to Abu Dhabi. So it does have, it holds really good memories for us, but now it's very much an investment property. I don't think we'll ever live in that house again. I don't even think I'll ever see that house again, to be honest, because it's in Melbourne where we never return to. We always go back to Sydney. So for me, it's just a business thing now.
Yes, which is a great way to feel about an investment property. That's a really clever way to see it.
Yeah, and I think if I'm honest, if I let myself think, because it's a great house, you know, it was our first home together, do you know what I mean? It means a lot to us, but I think if I let myself get too emotional about it, then I can't treat it as a business. You know, I'd want to go running back to it. And so I have to put the brakes on of having any sentimental feelings towards it. It's an investment property. It's doing really well for us. We bought it in an area that's really boomed. And so we've doubled our money on it now if we were to sell it. So it was a really good buy. And even though it does hold a lot of memories for us, you know, it's purely for investment now.
And says, would you buy a property in Doha?
We have, you know, in Doha, we can only buy on the Pearl, which is the man-made, for anyone that's not familiar with Doha, the Pearl is a man-made island that sits just next to the CBD. And we can buy in a new city that's being built at the moment called Lusail. And we have actually often thought about what it would be like to buy a house here because we do get a rental allowance. But really, rent money is dead money almost. You know, you don't get anything back from all the money that you spend on rent. So it would make sense to buy a house here. But I've heard too many horror stories from other expats that have bought apartments on the Pearl where it has just all gone pear-shaped. And we don't have a crystal ball. We don't know where we're going to be, you know, in a year or two. You just don't know what's going to happen. And I just think in this area, this region of the world, I wouldn't want to buy.
Now, this is one thing that I find really interesting. So, yeah, you don't know where you're going to be in a couple of years. But one of the places you are thinking of investing in is a place in Florida.
Yeah, so we work with a financial planner here where we put money into savings and we obviously send money back home to put on the mortgage in Melbourne. We would love to buy our dream home in Sydney, but that's just not a reality at the moment. One, the Sydney real estate market is absolutely ridiculous. And two, when we do go home, we've got so much room at both our parents' house that we don't need a home of our own when we go back to Sydney. So then, as I think everyone knows how much my husband and I love France, and that has always been a dream of ours to buy a house in France. But when we started to do the research on it, it was just too hard. The language and the renovations that would need to be done while we're living here, it just didn't make any sense to us. So then we've got a few friends that are from the States and they were telling us about Delaware and how it's a great tax system in Delaware and there's a great beach on the Atlantic Ocean. You could have a holiday house. So then we started researching that. Well, we wouldn't be able to rent a house out year round to holiday goers because at the moment there is a massive blizzard in that the States. So I don't think anyone is looking for a beach house to go and rent for a weekend in Delaware right now. And that's when we turned our thoughts to Florida and to Orlando, which we think would rent year-round to tourists. They're very cheap houses compared to what you would pay in Australia. There's no income tax in the state of Florida, which is very handy. And it's just something that can become part of our retirement fund. You know, if one house does well, then we would look at buying a couple more and that would be a little business that I would run on the side wherever we're living. And it's a place, you know, if we had a house, Sadie and I could go to in the summer if we weren't going back home. And I don't know, at the moment it just seems like a really good financial move for us.
Yeah. And, yeah, you're right with that summer because you do have a huge summer break that I think we don't have to think about in Australia. You know, school holidays over our summer are sort of 6 or 7 weeks, but when we're looking at school holidays in Doha, we're looking at, you know, 10 or 11 weeks.
And apparently this year they're going to be longer because the way that Ramadan and Eid falls, schools are not looking back, going back until mid to late September. So that's like more than 3 months off school. Like it's just,
yeah,
it's ridiculous. You know, that's a long time to be stuck here. It's a long time to go on a vacation where you're paying a fortune in accommodation costs. And I don't know if I want to spend that amount of time in Sydney as much as I love it. I can't see myself staying there for 3 months. So to maybe have a little holiday house in Orlando would be great. But more than that, we're thinking it'd be much, you know, we're thinking more of it from an investment point of view that people go to Florida all the time. You know, we've got friends that own holiday houses there and they rent year round, right through the Christmas period, in Easter. You know, it's a place that a lot of Americans go to for long weekends. And it's a place that a lot of foreigners want to visit. Everyone wants that big Florida holiday. You know, it's always on everyone's bucket list.
Yeah.
So I think that might be a good move for us.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. So,
and to my mum who is listening right now, who normally, I'll tell my mum when I'm going to the toilet, this is actually something that we haven't discussed with my parents yet. This is going to come as a big shock. I think you're the only person that I've really chatted to in depth about this. So there you go, mum.
So our expat situation with real estate is we left Australia 16 years ago. That just blows me away when I say that. It feels like about 6 years ago, but we left 16 years ago and we were about to buy a house in Perth, which probably we really should have, looking back.
Perth has just gone off, hasn't it?
It has, but, you know, it's all a bit...
It's starting to go downhill now, isn't it?
Yeah, there's some really sad stories coming out of Perth with Perth real estate, or people that have invested in rental properties and, you know, they can't get anyone to rent them and they're in sort of dire straits. Mm-hmm. But, yes, but back then, yeah, we definitely would have tripled our money had we bought a place back then. But, you know, I think it's easy to say those things too when you're starting out and you're married and you don't have a lot of cash and you get pregnant and, you know, it's very easy to say, oh, yes, we really should have bought a house when, you know, we really couldn't afford to put Vegemite on toast.
Yeah.
So we went off and our first 10 years of expat life, we came home for the holidays and kind of camped at my mum and dad's or camped at Greg's parents or found a serviced apartment, which was horrendously expensive, and really went in a suitcase from place to place. And there were some tough years there where I had very little children and we, you know, you were having to put up two porta cots everywhere you went and get stairs for the service department, you know, get the safety gate for the stairs for the service department.
Yep.
And, you know, you were just in perpetual motion all the time where you seemed to be constantly buying another box of dishwashing detergent or laundry powder that you were going to leave behind somewhere.
Yep.
You know, it was just a pain. So after we had got to Houston and there was talk of us going to Qatar, because I had lived in Libya before and I'd lived in that sort of region, I knew about the mass exodus that came over the summer and that most people tended to vacate and go somewhere. And so I sort of said to Greg, look, I really want to have a place in Australia if we're going to do that sort of move, because if we're going to come home for the summer and for a long period of time over the summer, I want somewhere to go to. So we settled on that and we bought our place here by the beach. And, you know, for us, it really works because our children have never lived in Australia. So we wanted to have that base where they had their postcode and that they could say, this is where I'm from, and they could start to meet some local kids. And we wanted to have, you know, the height chart on the wall and all that stuff. And it, as it's turned out, I think something that's become really clear is, you know, now that Lizzie's off to boarding school next week, we've realised that the time that she's had here has really helped, in that she started to, in the last couple of weeks, go to a few social things that have been on, and she's got there and told me about kids that she's run into that she's knows from down here, or that she knows from our life of coming home here every year, and connections she's made. And I've realised that that has been really handy for her, that she's been able to sort of have a conversation about this space. So that has been good. But it, you know, financially, it makes no sense at all, because we don't rent it out.
Because you're not making money from rent.
Yeah, we don't make any money.
And don't you think, because you and I are very different about this, and I think it's just because of our family situation. I have one, you have four. When I go home, you and Greg are from different states.
Yes.
Matt and I are from the same city. So when we go home, there's room for us. We've got our own rooms. Whereas I've got friends like you that have got, you know, a number of children. When they go home, it's living out of a suitcase. It's on pull-out beds. It's camped on the floor. That's not a holiday for anyone. So I can totally understand why people would then want their own place to go home to. But I just don't have that feeling, because we have our own rooms. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Look, I can't complain about...
It's very comfortable when we go home.
Yeah, I can't complain about space. I have to say, my parents live on a few acres, and, you know, they've got one of those great big old country homes. So definitely space is not the issue. But you touched on it with what you said before. For me, it's Greg and I met in Adelaide. Neither of our parents are in Adelaide. So for us, all of our connections of our friends and how we met and where we think our kids are going to go to school and where we think we're going to return to, neither of our parents have a place there. So for me, I could go home and hang out with Mum and Dad, and I loved hanging out with Mum and Dad, and I loved being there, but they're in a country town of 7,500 people. So it was, you know...
Not much oil and gas work for you.
Yeah, and then I couldn't see my friends. So it was like I could catch up with my old growing up life, and the life I had as a kid and, you know, as a teen. But the life I had in my 20s, that's all in Adelaide. And, you know, you'd sort of go, well, I want to take the kids to this play or this show, or I want to take the kids to hang out with my friend's kids. And you're still 4 hours away. So we were doing this whole, you know, go and then camp, go and find somewhere to stay so we could have that life for a little while and then, you know, go back again. So, yeah, because I know one of our comments was from Sarah Prunster, the lovely Sarah, who we're very lucky that she comes back to visit us often. she was saying that they have a house that's rented in Oz, and that sometimes they'd like their own place, but they could never justify all that time left empty when both parents have plenty of room for them.
I'm with Sarah on that one. I cannot imagine being 5-10 minutes down the road from my in-laws living in my own house just to go back for the holiday. It wouldn't happen.
And same
with living at Mum and Dad's, where, you know, we're only an hour and 20 minutes from Sydney. It's very easy to jump in the car, jump on a train. It wouldn't make any sense. And I think I don't have an emotional connection to the house in Melbourne because we're not from there. But if I had a house in Sydney, I think I'd have a very hard time letting other people live in it.
I think the other thing to think about too is, what's the longest amount of time that you go home for when you go and stay with your parents?
And it's 4 weeks. I think the longest I've done is 8, and that was too long. So we're just, you know, one of our other readers said that she has a house in the UK, but she spends 12 weeks of the year there. Well, then that makes sense to have your own house there that you keep empty. I don't go home for that amount of time. It would just be silly having a house sitting there collecting dust.
Yeah. And I think, and I can't work out whether this is the thing that happens too when you have an empty house. Do you end up spending more time there? Because if you look at how long I spent in this house in the last year, it's 4 months. You know, that's a long time to spend.
Yeah, absolutely. And perhaps if we did have that family home in Sydney, maybe I would go home more often. I don't, yeah, but then I know that my mother-in-law and father-in-law would be so upset that we didn't stay with them. I would hate that I'm not down, you know, breathing in that fresh country air with my parents. I just, at the moment, it just doesn't work to have a family home in Sydney.
Exactly. But then
the other thing that people have said, which really, we've been so fortunate, we've had the same tenants the last 7 years and they're Irish expats living in our house. And it's like you've picked up the Derrigs from Ireland and put them in our house. It's a husband and wife with one child. Like it just, it's like them, it, and they've been there the whole time and we've never, ever, ever had an issue, ever. But a lot of people have said that they don't rent their house out anymore because they've had such bad tenants. And I just have never thought about that because we never had bad tenants.
And there were a lot of those comments, wasn't there?
It was a really, oh, my God, hit home to me because if we were dealing with that week in, week out, month in, month out, I think we would have sold our house in Melbourne by now.
Yes. Ian Barron was saying that, wasn't he, that they had had some really, really shocking tenants. And one of the things, because I asked, what would they do next time if they had their time again? And he said definitely no more long-term letting, that they would keep the house furnished and do short-term lets like corporate relocations or something like Airbnb so that you get...
Yeah, I love that idea.
I know. And, do you know, we have thought the same thing. We've bought a block of land that we're going to build, a bigger sort of family home on, and we've thought the same thing with what we've got here in our current beach house is we would do more short-term lets and Airbnb. Yeah. But even then, you know, I have friends that have beach houses that say that it's heartbreaking when you see what people do to your house or the state that they're willing to leave your house in.
I think touch wood, we've just been really lucky with our tenants. The only thing is that it can be a bit of a, we didn't move to Abu Dhabi with any furniture. We moved with three suitcases. So all of our furniture, and when we talked to the property manager, we had decided we wanted to rent our house out furnished. And our property manager advised us not to because just the damage that can be done to your furniture, your TVs and what have you just wasn't worth it. We'd always be continually replacing a TV or a DVD machine or what have you. So all of our stuff sits in storage and it is such a waste of money. We really need to, I mean, we've been paying storage for 7 years now on stuff that I don't even want.
Yeah.
You know, sitting there. So there's all of these factors you have to consider as well when you're renting out a house. You've got to store everything. And that costs a lot of money.
The storage does cost a lot of money, doesn't it?
Yep.
And I've heard of so many people that said they got home and just threw it all out.
And I know I would too. The furniture that I've bought here in the Middle East, I actually furnish it with a house back home in mind. Do you know what I mean? I don't even want the furniture that's sitting in storage. It is just sitting there gathering dust and we're spending a fortune on it, but because we never go back to Melbourne, I only think about it maybe once a year, like, oh gosh, we spend a lot of money on storage, I've got to do something about that. But we never go back to Melbourne, so it would mean me having to make a special trip there to clean everything out, put it on eBay, donate stuff, and I just put it in the too hard, I'm too lazy basket.
Yes. The housing, well, I said yes, like, yes, you are too lazy. No, not at all. But I loved Rebecca's comment this week. She was talking about, I'll give you a read of it. It says, like most people in our little Alpine village, it never occurred to my husband to rent or buy. He inherited a house and its next door block of land. Much to the frustration of my expat friends here, the market here is the opposite of dynamic. It's impossible to break into. Everyone inherits and most homes have intergenerational families living in them, i.e. Omar and Opa live downstairs in a flat. Rebecca went on to sort of talk about how they were building their own place in Australia, but when she touched on the difference in Europe and people living, it really sort of struck me. And then I saw Rachel had also sent a message saying that she had lived in Germany and that the same similar thing, that she had thought that she would buy a house in Germany because she had always been a homeowner in America. And when she got there, she realised that that's not really how it worked in Germany, that the market doesn't work that way, and that she met other expats who had bought homes in Germany and just could not sell them, and that, that they were going to be what she called forever owners. Anyway, I spoke to Rachel, and she...
I'm very interested in listening to this.
Yes, so she's living in Washington, D.C. now, but I began asking her sort of whether Washington was home for her now.
Okay.
I'm originally from America, but I was from Alabama, which is in the South. Mm-hmm. And when we moved back to America, Washington is where the job was that I got. So that's where we moved.
And where did your expat life take you? Had you, was it just to Germany, or were there a few other visits as well?
Well, we went to Germany, and I worked in the UAE. I worked in Abu Dhabi while we were in Germany, and so that was about a couple of years really of back and forth between Germany and the UAE. And we were planning on not ever moving back to the States, but my mother was diagnosed with cancer. And it took about 4 months to get back when that happened. But, you know, that's a different story. But I didn't anticipate coming back. But then you just never know, you know, what's going to happen.
Do you mean you were going to stay away for forever or just for a little bit longer?
Really forever. You know, it's funny because everybody is different about that. Like I had, you know, women friends who just couldn't wait to get back. And, you know, for me, I when I left, I really didn't have any intention of living in America again. I just, you know, we were probably going to go to Italy next. And, you know, who knows after that, you know, I just didn't intend on coming back. But I guess you never really know. You know, I've seen you've posted before, you know, question about what about aging parents? What do you think? What are your plans? And I think at the time that we left, my parents were still, you know, completely healthy and not, you know, what I even felt like was old. And, you know, things just change and your idea of it changed. And when she needed, you know, when she needed me, that for me, that was it, you know.
Wow, I completely understand. Yeah. Everything changes in an instant, doesn't it?
So
I wanted to know, because I was fascinated with your story with housing. So you had a home in America that you sold, and that all makes sense now with you saying too that you weren't sure when you were coming back, and so you sold it. But tell me about the housing market in Germany and why you didn't buy in Germany.
Well, it's really interesting because I did when we got there. I honestly didn't know yet that it was that the market was as different as it is. But you know how it is when you go to a new country. You know, you can do research, but somehow it hadn't been on my radar to research, you know, buying. It's just, you just assume that it's the, you know, in America, we have a real bias towards home ownership. You know, we have pretty significant tax incentives for buying as opposed to renting. And, you know, once you're of a certain socioeconomic status, most people own instead of rent. And so when we moved over there, I just kind of had this bias, even though we knew we wouldn't be in Germany forever. To be honest, I kind of thought Germany might be our retirement country. And so we, you know, we talked about it a lot. We thought about it a lot. The first thing to do though was when we first got there, we were in a hotel for 3 months. There's this very, very, very tight rental market, and we didn't want it to buy before we knew the country. So I kind of thought that we would get into a rental property, and then, you know, after the first year, after we understood the lay of the land, and because you just can't know the neighborhoods, and I didn't know yet, you know, what the school situation was going to be, and, you know, so I didn't want to buy right off the bat. So, you know, so we finally found a house to rent. And after that, well, within 6 months of when we moved in, the family that we were renting from had moved to Berlin, and this was their family home. They'd always lived there with their children. And in Germany, the houses tend to be, the mortgages in America are normally 30-year mortgages, and in Germany, they're frequently 50-year mortgages. And houses are handed down from parent to child, and a lot of times the next generation will just simply continue to live, you know, in the house. And there are frequently what we call mother-in-law suites, like in the basement, where the elderly parents go until they pass away, and then the whole thing like starts all over again. And so they're not accustomed when they own a house of selling it. And so the family that we were renting from had moved to Berlin, and they abruptly separated and were going to get a divorce. And they told us that the house was going on the market. And so at that point, you know, we had talked to enough other people, other expats, who, like, I knew people, and we lived in Stuttgart, who had been stationed in Germany before at a different location and had bought a house and had had time to be back in America for a tour, were back in Germany again, and had still not been able to sell their house in where they lived before. And there just aren't very many people who own, and selling is really difficult. And so while we were living in this house, we lived there for 6 years in this house, and it was on the market for 5.5 years, and it still had not sold by the time we moved. And so we spent, you know, five and a half years wondering when we were going to be evicted, and it never came because the house just never sold. And it was a fabulous house too. It was rather expensive, but then housing is fairly expensive in Stuttgart.
That was going to be my next question, is are the houses, because they're so hard to sell, are they incredibly expensive?
Well, you know, I think that you have to be very, very well off to be a homeowner there, because there are no tax incentives for owning. Matter of fact, there are tax incentives for renting, and so it doesn't pay to own. There's no special, you know, kind of benefit for owning, and the transaction costs, the closing costs, being 25% of the value of the house. Our house was listed for 800,000 euros. Which at the time was over $1 million. So if you think about the fact that just the closing costs when it sells would be 200,000 euros, it's a huge disincentive to sell. And that's why it's also a really big problem when people divorce, because you own this property together that you can't unload, and the cost of unloading, you just obviously have to be basically really wealthy, you know, to have that much money, you know, laying around to go towards the transaction cost.
Does it affect the divorce rate?
Well, you know, that's a real interesting question. I don't know if it strikes me that if I were in that position, it would be a big incentive to stick together and make it work, because it's going to financially bankrupt you if you have to sell this house that you have together. And they fought it out in court the entire 5 years. And as tenants in that situation, it was a nightmare, really, to be honest. It had a lot of effects on, because one of them was, you know, collecting the rent, and it was the other one who was supposed to take care of. It was an older house and had a lot of maintenance issues, and nobody paid the taxes to the city. And in Germany, they can collect from the tenant if the owner doesn't pay. And so we had the city pursuing us for the land taxes for the house. And it just turned into a real nightmare, although I was really overall glad that we didn't get, you know, evicted, because the cost of moving is very high. Even just the cost of getting movers and the deposits and the, you know, it's just a very expensive housing market all around.
So in the time that you were there, did you have a lot of people coming through to look at the house? Did you have to put up with open inspections or any of that? Or was it just there was just no real interest in the house in that time?
Well, there no, it never showed for 5 years.
Oh, are you?
It never showed once.
Not one. Yeah, not one person came to look at the house. Is that what you mean? Not one.
Not one person in 5 years. And so when we gave notice that we were about to move, two different people came to see the house. But as of the time we left, you know, it still had not sold. And at that point, I think that it would probably be really hard to sell because Germans are very particular about things being maintained and in working order and everything being right and proper. And so at that point, there was so much deferred maintenance on like really big things like the furnace, a retaining wall had fallen down. You know, it would be really hard to sell other than maybe, you know, to an American expat who didn't know any better. It would have been really hard to sell to a German at that point. So yeah, no one even looked at it. Although they don't even, like in America, we put signs in the yard, and that's how you know what is for sale. But over there, it's totally a system of brokers. And so they brokers, you know, you list a house exclusively, and I don't know if they have a database like we have in America where everybody lists everything, but there's no, you know, sign in the yard where you can just drive by and see it, you know, it's for sale and you call that number and ask about it. You have to be like working with a realtor who knows it's for sale. So it's very different to me. It was at least. Wow. So I was really glad that we didn't buy because we would certainly still own it.
So Sarahs, how interesting was that?
That was so fascinating. But first of all, Rachel, I just love your accent. I'm a sucker for a Southern accent. but I just found that so fascinating because, as we mentioned before, Matt's company is German and there is talk that in a few years we may actually move to Germany. So, of course, when Matt was offered the job, the first thing I did was go on and look at what houses were like in Germany, even though it's years down the track. And now it all makes sense. The puzzle fits together because I could not find any houses for sale. Like, if anything, I think I found one. And it now completely makes sense because these houses are passed from generation to generation.
And could you believe the transaction costs of getting in and out of the house?
Unbelievable. I cannot wait. This is, my husband doesn't listen to this podcast, even though I think he says that he does, he doesn't. But I'm going to make him listen to that interview because that's something we would have to think. Because we assumed we would move to Germany and if it was a long-term thing, we would buy a house there. Well, that's just not going to fly now.
No.
Absolutely. I'm not paying 200,000 euros in transaction fees. My goodness. I'm 5.5 years on the market and not one person came in to look at it.
That was the other thing that absolutely floored me was that no one came to look at it.
In Germany, had Dad and I been there, we would have been the only people to look through that house.
If you'd ever been able to find how to find the house, like no sign out the front, no, you know, germanyrealestate.com.tv.
And that it all makes sense because when I was Googling real estate companies and real estate websites, really nothing came up. It all makes so much sense to me now.
Now, we also had some fantastic comments from people. Really interesting to sort of hear what other people do, isn't it, Sarahs?
Yes, yeah. Because, you know, before you become an expat, I know this is definitely for us, when we were living in Australia, we would never have even entertained the idea of buying a house overseas. Do you know what I mean? But when you become expats and you're living in different countries and you're talking to other people, all of a sudden the world opens up and you realise that actually it might make financial sense to have a house in Penang or to buy that house in Florida, even though you're not from there. Whereas I think when you're at home and you're not living overseas, that you don't even consider those things. Well, at least we didn't.
Oh, no, neither did I. I am far too scaredy cat to invest in properties overseas. I think for me it's Yeah, I have a lot of friends, or actually I shouldn't say a lot of friends. I have a handful of friends that have bought a property or built a property in Bali, or they've built in Thailand, or they have a house in France. I know a couple of Australian expats with houses in France. But I am far too conservative, I think, with my finances, and just a bit scared of how I would manage them. And also, I guess it comes back to that whole thing, four kids and whatever. I am such a little planner of how it's all going to work out that I'm conscious of, oh, no, we can't afford to do that because we need to be putting our money here to have this here and that there.
Yes. But,
So I'm just not sort of brave enough to do it. But, I think it is really a real expat thing, isn't it? Like so many people in their messages said, we've got a place in Croatia, or we've got a place in Cyprus, or we've got a place in Thailand, you know.
Yep.
But I also think there's an element of that is a lot of expats aren't married to people of the same background or culture or nationality. So, for instance, Kristen, who wrote about having a place in Cyprus, that's because they're in Singapore, and her husband, I know because we've interviewed Kristen before, she's a cancer survivor as well. I hate that term. Why did I use that term? She also has breast cancer like I do. See, this is why I don't get cross when people say really stupid things, because I get it, because I'm sure I've said all the stupid things before as well. And I know she would hate it that I just said that as well. But, yeah, so her husband, that's sort of his background, but they know they're not going back to the UK. And, you know, now they're even thinking of buying a place in Singapore because they have a business in Singapore. So I think expat lives get very complicated geographically.
And like I was saying before, there's no crystal ball. Like if we knew for certain that we were going to be living here in Doha until Matt retired, I would be straight down there buying an apartment on the Pearl. Do you know what I mean? That would make sense. But you just don't know where you're going to be. You don't know what's going to happen. But I think having a house in your home country makes sense, because if everything goes belly up, well, that's the first place you're going to run home to. You're going to run home.
See, that's really interesting, Ceci, because if I thought we were going to retire live in Doha until we were sort of 70, I still wouldn't buy a house at the Pearl. I still wouldn't buy something at the Pearl.
You wouldn't? Well,
no,
yeah.
I'd be too scared because I just don't think we have the legal rights.
And from the horror stories that I've heard, you're absolutely right. But, yeah, I wouldn't do it. But I'd love, if I knew that the region was safe, if the laws were great.
Right.
Do it. But I think with something like buying in Orlando, the properties are incredibly inexpensive compared to what we would pay for a holiday house back home. We wouldn't even have a holiday house back home. We'd have one family home and that would be it. So, and financially, it's not a big gamble. If it all goes belly up, at the end of the day, it's not that bad.
So a lot of people I know buy homes back in their home country as sort of Greg calls ours the, what do you do when you pull the cord for your parachute? You know, like, I guess you pull the cord for your parachute. Yes.
The release cord.
The release cord. So Greg called our beach house the release cord, so that if everything turned pear-shaped tomorrow, that we would have somewhere that we could go to.
Yes.
And I think that is what gets under the skin of a lot of expats, is they get a bit nervy about, well, where would we go? What would we do? Mm-hmm. And, I mean, I know with you, Ces, you're absolutely fine because you have space at your parents' house that you could go and camp there for a few months until you got sorted. You'd be absolutely fine.
If everything went really up tomorrow, it would make sense to go back to our house in Melbourne, absolutely, if there was the work there. If there wasn't the work there, then, I don't know, we'd just camp in with Mum and Dad, and Matt would pull beers at the local pub, I guess, until things got sorted out. That doesn't worry me. That doesn't scare me.
So I had a chat to Melanie, who has been in Shanghai since August. So she is new, green as grass expat life. Yes. We had a really good chat, and it was just was really good to go back to talking about what it's like when you first enter into expat life and you're trying to make it all work for you. But one of the things that Melanie had said is that they'd sold their house in the US, and so they really had
to move to Shanghai
as expats. So I thought, why don't we have a little listen to Melanie about what it feels like not to have that home base and to kick off your new life in Shanghai.
So we lived in Cincinnati, Ohio. We always feel like we were kind of already a dual culture family. My husband is from India, and he came to the U.S. to do his master's, and then he and I met when he was doing his PhD, and then I captured him and kept him in the U.S. But we have friends that are diplomats, so we traveled quite a bit. Like, we kind of had an agreement with them that we would try to go and see them, whatever post that they were at. And sadly, as the children got older and school schedules started conflicting with, it didn't work. But so we've traveled a bit. It's something that we've always wanted to do, to the point that we hosted international students in our house for 3 years. So we did like foreign exchange students that came and lived with us for 10 months or, a school year. And then about this time last year, my husband got invited to interview for this position. And we talked it over with the kids, and they were a go, so we're doing it.
You're in Shanghai. Are your children in Shanghai with you?
They are. They are, yes. So my daughter is a junior. So this was a big decision, because this is her last 2 years of high school, the way that the U.S. system goes. And my son was an eighth grader. So, it's kind of like his getting ready to go into high school. Is this going to work? And so we came over. So we did a lot of talking as a family about how we wanted to manage it, including even talking about, my husband working here in China and the rest of us staying in the States. But in the end, we decided that we wanted to stay together as a family, and so we did it. We made the big jump, and we came over. My husband and I came over last May. We did the look-see trip, and found a great school and a house nearby, and finally everything seemed to fall into place.
So I take it you sold the family home in Cincinnati?
We weren't sure if we, with my husband's position, we're not sure if we'll go back to Cincinnati. And we had just seen a lot of friends like hang on to the house, and it seemed to become a burden to them. You've got the house, then of course, if you keep the house, then you've got the storage unit. And then, we're not sure what's going to happen next. And so it was just kind of like one less thing to manage. If we didn't have that.
Yeah. I imagine, though, did it make that move, do you think, more emotional? Because I gather that was the family home that you'd brought the children home to.
Yeah. We had been there for 9 years. So with my daughter, we moved into that house when she was a first grader. And with my son, it's really, he has very vague memories of the house that we lived in before. So it definitely was the family home. And, we had, of course, fixed it up. Like, of course, what you do with a home, you upgrade it and you fix it up and you, finish the basement and you, buy huge electronics that are, built into the basement and, the whole rigmarole. But it just seemed like if we left it behind, I don't know. I don't even know how to explain it, but maybe you've been an expat longer, so maybe you can understand, but there was a point when I got to thinking, okay, so if we keep the house and we rent it out, then when we move back here, we'll move back in, and there was kind of an ick factor to it.
Yes, like someone else had slept in your bed and been in your fridge. Yes, I do get it.
And so somehow I was able to explain that to my family. And they somehow understood my, confusion around it. And I think the other thing was just because of the timing, that's like, so if we're here for 2 years and we go back to the United States, then our daughter will be going off to college. And so we won't need the huge family home.
Yes.
You know, and of course we always want to have a place for the kids to come home to, but that might not look like the huge house in the suburbs. It might look like, you know, a condo where the, you know, where the office becomes a bed, or I don't know. We don't even know what it looks like, but there got to be a point where the house, I think it happens with most people, the house has a personality of its own, and it was kind of getting big and grumpy, you know, like managing it was getting big and grumpy. And so we just kind of decided, you know, is this, my husband and I talked about it, is this where we would live if it was just the two of us? And we decided it wasn't. Like, it was much more of a house than two people need to live in full time.
I love the way you've explained that. That is so true. A house does develop its own personality, doesn't it?
Yes. And it's like, you know, when we moved in there, the kids were small. And I even have, we have an older daughter who's 29. And at the time we moved into the house, she was 19, so, you know, we weren't kind of even sure if she was out of the nest quite yet, you know, and she did lay back in there, you know, for a couple months, and then, you know, was back out on her own. But so it's like we bought this house, which made sense at the time, which was 2006, for the family that we had at the time. And then as we upgraded it and, you know, fixed it up, we had lots of lovely family gatherings in it. You build this home. And then when you start thinking about, okay, if the kids are gone, what are we going to do with this three floors of finished space?
And so then I guess the question comes, what happens when you guys go home in the summer, or do you not go home in the summer? How is that going?
Well, yeah, so we are going to go home in the summer, and this, but it's kind of ironic. We've already switched our thinking. This is home, like Shanghai is home. You know, we downsized quite a bit. We ended up bringing our furniture, which wasn't what we intended to do in the beginning, but we found a house that it's like, you know what? I think our American furniture will fit in this house. And so we did bring it. And but we are going back to Ohio in the summer. And we had a couple of discussions, and one of it was just to rent an, you know, Airbnb for a month. You know, because it's like, okay, well, this is an expense, but if we were going on vacation, we would need a hotel room for, you know, for it. So, but it is still quite emotional to think about going back there and not being in the house, being in that home. And also it's emotional not to have a permanent address.
Yes, I completely understand. Yeah.
And so it's kind of like, okay, you know, when we got to that point, it's like, okay, where do we forward our mail to?
So where do you forward your mail to?
We forward our mail to our neighbors in Ohio. I'm sure the mailman is quite confused.
Now, I guess the big question a lot of other expats are going to want to know, because I know a lot of people buy a house and they see it as that's their savings, you know, that they're paying off a mortgage and that's kind of their forced savings. So what do you do financially? I mean, obviously you must have got a lump sum from the house. And so what's your financial dilemma then?
Right. So we worked with a financial planner. We have a plan in place so that we are saving, so that when we go back, you know, we will be able to purchase real estate. So I think that's, you just have to have the plan in place. But that was a big, I mean, it weighs on me, because I think about if we do move back to the U.S., you know, we'll have, you know, a fresh mortgage, you know, two car payments, kids in college.
Yes.
It's and it seems like I think our kids are old for a first time expat assignment. So it's like I see people here and they're traveling all over the place, and I'm like, oh, I'd love to do that too. But and we have traveled. It's not like we don't. But I think we're very cautious. But I think there, you know, but it is tempting. You know, there is that temptation to just go ahead and buy something now, and then we go, well, but then I don't know, it just doesn't, we don't want it to be like a stone around our necks.
All right. So one of the things Melanie didn't say, and I just want to throw it in there, says, because after listening to the interview, is she said that she really wanted to mention how much her life was simplified by making it fit into a 40-foot container.
Yes. Yeah, I can understand that.
So what did
and
you
think? What I love about Melanie is that she captured her husband. I love that because Matt says that I'm the man trap, that I trapped him. I love it. I love it.
Yes.
At first, when you said that they had sold their family home to move to Shanghai, I was like, oh, my God, why would anyone do that? Now that is a gamble, but it now makes sense. That house is far too big for them. As they've got, their children are getting older, it would make no sense to keep that house.
No, that's right. And I just loved that term about the ick factor too, that she wanted to sell it, because I get it. Like, I don't know if I would. I understood what she meant, but I don't know if I would be the same. But I know I have friends that would be the same, because we have friends here around the corner who said to me the other day, "Oh, but you wouldn't rent your beach house out, would you? Because that would be gross. Like to come back and feel that those people had been in your home." And I'm like, "No, I'll be fine."
And see, I don't get that ick factor, but I think, one, we didn't live in our house in Melbourne for very long. I think we were only there for 18 months. Two, it was in a city that's not my hometown. So I really hadn't – I do love Melbourne, but I hadn't – it doesn't have my loyalty just yet. but I think had that house – you know, and Melanie and her family lived in that house for, what did she say, 9 years? Mm-hmm. 9 or 10 years? Well, I can totally understand that. Had Matt and I been in a house in Sydney for that long – I would have had a very hard time. I would have had a hard time even moving overseas, actually, had we not been in Melbourne. I don't even think we'd be here if we had been stayed in Sydney.
Yeah, you've said that before.
Yeah, there's no way.
Yeah. Now, I know one of the comments you really loved, because it was a good one to think about, was Dahlia had mentioned that they'd just moved to Cape Town and they'd almost bought a house there, but it fell through at the last minute, and that she was really kind of grateful it did, because then they discovered that their company policy is that you lose your housing allowance if you buy it. And I should probably just explain, because anyone who's not an expat might not understand, that quite often on expat assignments you get a housing allowance to help you pay the rent.
Yes. Yeah, and that I had – Dahlia, thank you so much for that comment, because I had never – that had never even crossed my mind.
Mm-hmm. We were able to use our housing allowance in both Calgary and Houston to pay off our mortgage. But I have a feeling that we – oh, no, it must have been all above board, because one of the other things that often happens in the expat world too is if you do buy a house when you're in another country, if you're working for a big company, quite often they will help you out when it comes to moving on and paying out the mortgage. They may pay those fees of having to, you know, shut down the mortgage and leave the country.
Uh-huh.
Yes. And I know that happened for us in Houston and in Calgary, because if they are moving you, it's not your fault that you had to pack up and go. It's theirs. So they will assist you in that sometimes.
Well, that's handy. These are really good tips. And I think also, make sure that you can, because here, if you were to buy a house in Doha, I would actually think you'd need letters from your employer to show your salary statement, how long you've been working there. So then if the company is not allowing you to use your rental allowance, then you're going to be in a spot of poo, really.
Yes.
So I don't think you could buy a house here in Doha without your employer finding out. Whereas back home in Australia, your employers have nothing to do with how you buy and sell property.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I mean, the whole thing is, when you live in your home country, your employer has nothing to do with that part of your personal life. There's so
much. Well, they have nothing to do with your life. I mean, the companies here, they have a say in where your children go to school, because some people get schooling allowance, and maybe it's only for certain schools they have. I mean, we've just purchased a new car. my God, the letters we had to have from Matt's company to approve us to buy a new car was ridiculous. That would never happen back home.
When did you buy a new car? Just recently?
Yes.
Oh, I don't know about this.
I'll take you for a run in it when you get back. But just all I'm saying is we were back home and bought a new car. No one at work would have anything to do with it. But here your company is involved in so much of your life. When it comes to housing, schooling, buying, even to go and buy booze and pork, you need permission from your company.
Yeah, and this is why I think so many people, so many spouses, find it so taxing and mentally challenging is because all of a sudden their partner, whether it be man nor woman, you hear it from both sides of the fence, is your partner's making, their company is making these decisions for you. It's like, well, what do you mean I can't travel? You know, sometimes it's even, oh, you're not allowed to travel to that area because we've deemed it too unsafe. So, you know, we don't want you to go, or we don't want your partner to, you know, hop on that quad bike in the desert because you might get hurt. You know, ridiculous things where it really comes in your life. No, you can't set up your hairdressing salon in your house because we're not going to change anything in your rental agreement, you know, so you can't have your career. I mean, lots and lots of ways that all of a sudden the company, you know, it's kind of very much like joining the firm. Remember that movie, The Firm, with Tom Cruise?
It's kind of like the company are really boring, strict parents. Like, please, can I go and buy some booze and pork, please?
Now, Suze, you had written out some great expat tips for buying property, and you know,
these are just the things that I've been thinking about as we're going through the process, and it's in very much preliminary stages. Don't worry, Mum, I haven't bought anything yet. But I think it's really important to research the area that you're going to buy in, and that's why we won't be starting anything until we actually go to Orlando this summer, and just to be there on the ground and have a look at some places and talk to some real estate agents and just make sure it is the right decision. At the moment, it's all just pipe dreams and chats. But someone commented, I'm trying to find who it was, that they actually bought a house sight unseen.
Yep.
Did we?
We did that too. And I was just about to say that, is that I think because with Sydney Shaw, whose name I absolutely love because sounds like she's just a like a big resort or a some sort of, you know, exotic location somewhere, doesn't she? But yes, Sydney Shaw did say that she had bought a house sight unseen, but it was back in her home country. And I think that's the difference. Yes, go ahead and buy a house sight unseen in your home country because
you know the area.
You know the area. And yeah, we did. We famously bought our beach house off the internet.
And did you have anyone go and have a look at the house for you?
We did. We had my beautiful cousin Bianca from Big, she's a blogger at Big Words. So we had Bianca came with Brett, who's a photographer, so that was a bit handy. And so he took lots of great shots to sort of give us a really good idea of what it looked like. But they walked in and went, yep, this place is amazing. You have to get it. You have to get it. And you know, did the things of scoped out the neighbours and, you know, told us sort of a bit more about, you know, they did photos of the street and the corner, and so you got a real feel for what it would be like to arrive and walk around and whatever.
That's a really good tip. If you can't be there, do you have someone that you trust enough to go and say, yep, you'll love this house?
And but, someone, you know, with similar taste as you too.
Yes, like, for me it's my mum and dad. Like, I know I could just send my mum and dad anywhere and they could say, yep, she'll like that. No, she'll hate it.
Yes, yeah, that's a good one.
And some other tips is to really research what the tax situation is in that city or state. You know, Florida doesn't have income tax, so that's a big benefit for us with purchasing a holiday house, because it will become, you know, we will be making money from it. So to not have to pay income tax is handy. And the other thing, we've just recently swapped banks here in Doha, because the bank we were originally with do not have any help with overseas foreign property investment, whereas the bank we've now swapped to does. That's what they're known for. Because if you think about it, Qataris, the local people, I mean, they've got houses everywhere. Yes. So there has to be a bank here that helps them with all of that. So we've just recently swapped banks to help us, you know, in the next year or two when we buy this house, hopefully. And, you know, research the market. Is the property market cooling or is it heating up? You know, there's we know of a few people that bought places in Dubai before the GFC, and I know for sure they are regretting that purchase now because they've still got it and they can't sell it.
Yes, yes. And I think even if you are an Australian and you're an expat and you're buying property in Australia, banking can be very tricky there. We've just bought a piece of land and we usually bank with a big international bank that a lot of expats bank with. That should be enough information for people to know who it is. And
start with a
P. Yes. Ends with a C. And they weren't able to help us because our beach house is 45 minutes out of the city. And they said, oh, that doesn't fit in our jurisdiction of loans. So it was really interesting. We had to go and find another bank. And the fact that we were expats was a real issue for the banks.
Yeah. And I've actually put a link to an article about how hard it is for UK expats to buy property back home. And we actually have friends at the moment that are looking at buying a house back in their home country. And here the way that the salaries work is you get a basic salary, but on top of that you get your rental allowance, you get a travel allowance, you get all these different allowances that become one bulk monthly payment. But these mortgages will be based on that basic salary. So just you might be earning it, you know, a huge salary, but it'll that mortgage, they'll only take it on the basic, and you can be stopped from buying a house because of that.
Yeah, that's a very good point.
Yeah, yeah. So we've got friends dealing with that at the moment, actually. He earns really good salary, but the basic is quite small, and they're fighting with the bank to try and get this mortgage approved, otherwise they'll lose the house that they want to buy.
Now, Suze, I thought one thing that was really interesting, like we were talking about Germany before, was did you see Pip Snell left a comment saying that they had decided to buy in Germany because the interest rates were so low? So I guess that's...
Yes, I read that. Yeah. Well, because she the one house that's for sale in Germany, I guess, so they were desperate to sell it. One remaining house in Germany.
Okay, so we also had last comment is we had Anu who said they sold their house in Finland about one and a half years ago, and financially they took a really bad beating, and in the end they just decided that losing money was less stressing than worrying about an old house and renting it. They had some really bad experiences with renting it out. Just another common theme, isn't it, Sarah? So many people with bad renters. Yeah, and I think, you know, it's that whole thing, everybody had this other thing about I worry about not owning any property, you know, or not having that base. But
it's a big Australian thing and an American thing to own your own house, isn't it?
Yeah, it like is.
It's what you do. It's that's the whole reason for life, I guess, is, and I've often said to Matt when, you know, a couple of years ago when, you know, he was getting retrenched and the financial crisis was just, it really, really took a toll on us. I would say to Matt, let's just sell Melbourne. We don't need it. We can put more money in the stock market. We can save money. And he was adamant. He needed to own that house. He refused to let it go. Well, I think it's just that Australian thing. You buy a house.
And I think you're right, Cez. It's also that thing is, you know, I have friends with a house in Melbourne who live here in Adelaide, and their reason for not selling the house in Melbourne is that if they sold it, they'd never be able to get back into the property market in Melbourne. Yeah, and I think that's one thing we all live in fear of is, well, if I don't buy now, you know, it's like me saying, I wish we would have bought something in Perth 16 years ago, because, you know, it would be worth millions now if we had. But also it does, you've also got to remember how much you spend on that house, how much it costs you to have that house. It's very easy only to see it in the dollars that you earn in value, but you forget about the money that you spend throwing at a property to keep it maintained.
And the stress that it can put on a relationship if you've got bad tenants and everything's, you know, going haywire, that then puts a stress on your relationship. Is it worth that?
Yes, yes. Now, on to the articles that we've attached. I had to attach, when Rachel had mentioned the thing about German houses, I had to go and investigate because I was just fascinated with the whole thing. And evidently it all goes back to the war. But one of the interesting articles that I found was it showed all the different countries and their home ownership rates in the world. And
Spain.
Yes, and Spain was the had the highest number of home ownerships.
And a lot of them would be, I know a lot of expats buy property in Spain, a lot of Brits buy houses in Spain, don't they?
Yeah, they
do. There's areas of Spain where all you hear is English accents.
Yes, yes. But then but then Ireland was second. And then Greece was third, Belgium fourth, and Mexico fifth. So I know. So I guess.
And look how far down the US is, whereas I thought the US would be very much, most people would buy their own house.
Well, you've got to think a lot of Americans can't afford their own house.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. They've got such a large pop. Yeah, it's very interesting. And there's Germany and Switzerland right down the bottom.
I know. So Australia was on 69% of Australians own their own home. But, so we were number, what are we, number seven? Canada was
number... I thought we'd be higher than that.
But Canada was number nine, which placed them above the US, which was at number 10.
Yes, it is.
And a lot of European countries right down the bottom, like you said, Switzerland, Germany, Denmark, Austria and France, all down the bottom.
I guess if we have to move to Germany, I'm either moving in with Pippa or I'm renting.
I guess there's, what did you see on social media this week?
So I saw, I don't know if you would call it a blog post, it was on The Motherish. Is that a, it's more like a mother website type thing, isn't it? It's not really a blog. Anyway.
Is The Motherish part of Mamma Mia?
I think it is. And it popped up on my Facebook and I really had a, as Oprah would call it, an aha moment because it was the title of the post was called Don't Call My Daughter a Tomboy. And that, you know, sparked an interest in me straight away because I myself have labelled Sadie a tomboy often. And the opening line of this article, it was like, you know, it was like I had said it. And Sadie has come home so many times and said, I'm kind of like a boy, mummy, because I'm active. I like to run and play sports, so I'm a tomboy. And the mother who wrote this article, she got really upset by it because just because you're a girl who likes sports doesn't mean that you're a tomboy. And it's this whole getting back to the whole gender thing, and it really hit home for me because Sadie is a kid, like I'm sure there's lots of other girls out there that one minute she's very... she's getting dirty, she's climbing trees, she's all into Star Wars, and then the next day she's playing at Barbies in the dollhouse and begging me, can she go down to the shop with a full face of makeup on? Do you know? And I think there's a lot of little girls out there. And this article just really hit home to me because my pet hate in life is going to toy shops where they section everything off into boys and girls sections. Mm-hmm. And Sadie has often been made to feel guilty or that she can't have a toy because it's in the boy section. Mm-hmm. And that breaks my heart. It really breaks my heart because there's times we go into the toy shops and she's really into Lego and she's obsessed with Star Wars and all the Star Wars Lego is in the boy section. Mm-hmm. And she almost feels like she can't buy something from there. And I think it goes with the boys that love to play with dolls and love to play with Barbies. You know, it's almost you're made to feel bad because you're wanting to buy girls' toys, and it's one of my biggest pet hates in life, and I just loved reading this article.
I know it makes you realise that we really haven't come that far when you see those things, you know. Because
when I used to call Sadie a tomboy, I didn't even think that it was a bad thing. But after reading this article, I realised I have completely brought gender into the whole thing, and it shouldn't be like that. She's just Sadie, and Sadie is a girl that one day wants to have a full face of makeup on and try on my high heels, and the next day she's out with her mates that the majority of them are boys, and they're climbing trees and they're getting dirty, and she's watching the cricket with her dad and Star Wars and this whole thing.
Yeah.
And we've just got to stop labelling these kids.
I think I hope I've kept it, but Henry Hot Dog's Christmas list this year was a Nerf gun, Lego, the Star Wars little thing that's really popular at the moment, the little robot that's in the two balls, and two Barbies.
Two balls. Sorry, two balls. And, yeah, see.
I did just say that, didn't I?
I think he's called Beef. Is he B-52? I can't remember what his name is.
Isn't that a drink? I know he's like...
No, I think it's a band. No, yeah, it's the new character in Star Wars where he's like two soccer balls.
Yes.
Yeah, two balls.
But he's that like a big soccer ball.
Two balls.
He's a big soccer ball and a little soccer ball on top
of it. Yeah. But yeah, see, Sadie and Henry, very similar in that they like things from, you know, that typical, you know, I'm using the air quotes here, girl and boy, and I just hate that. I hate that. And we've got to stop it now, because our kids will just carry on and they'll think it's the norm and it shouldn't be.
Yeah.
It's like Sadie is obsessed with Star Wars, thanks to my husband, and all she wanted was Star Wars T-shirts, and we could only find them in the boys' section. And she was like, oh, Mommy, but I have to wear boys' clothes. And it was like, if you want Star Wars, darling, it doesn't matter that it's from the boys' section.
And so she got the T-shirts.
And it's not a boys' thing. It's just we've got to stop all of this. Like, just let kids be kids.
Absolutely, absolutely. This is what I mean about I don't think we've gone that far sometimes, is that people still giggle when kids want to do those things, and they still make a big deal out of it when kids do, you know, like Henry hides the whole Barbie thing, that he likes to do that, because people will giggle at him and make fun of him and have something to say about it. So until people stop doing that, it's still going to be an issue.
Yeah, absolutely. So stop doing it, everyone. Just play with your two balls and forget about it.
So my social media this week, I've got just three videos this time. One of the things I loved on that came up in my Facebook feed this week was the Ethics Centre had posted a speech that Stan Grant, who's an ex... well, he was a newsreader in Australia for a long time, and then he went off and travelled the world.
He became an expat, didn't he?
He did.
Singapore, I think, or Hong Kong?
Yes, 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 and he was with CNN. Yep.
That's right.
And he's of Aboriginal descent, and he has just given the most amazing 8-minute speech where he talks about the Australian dream. But... he gave a few statistics in his speech, and one of them was that even though Aboriginals are 3% of the population, 25% of them are locked up in prison. Just seems completely unbelievable, doesn't it?
Yeah.
That
yeah.
you are yeah. more likely to go to prison than you are to finish high school if you are an Australian boy.
And I can guarantee these statistics are not being taught in schools. You do think about it, but it's not until you really do your research. One of my history subjects, I learned so much more about Aboriginal history and Australian history that is just never, ever, ever taught in schools. It's just, that is just a horrific statistic, horrific.
It is, isn't it? But it's really worth watching. We'll put a link on our twofatexpats.com. But if you can take 8 minutes of your time, maybe we might even post it on the Facebook page as well, on our own Facebook page, because it just is really worth listening. Now, on a much lighter note, says you and I have spoken about my time of living in Canada and the cold and how I dealt with the cold very badly. And one
Storm Jonah has just hit, hasn't it?
Yes. And one of the conversations I always recite when I talk about how bad the weather is in Canada is how I went out for a business lunch with clients, and we were talking about the weather and how shocking the weather was, and somebody said, "Oh, but I hear that it's going to be good next Tuesday." And we all got so excited about next Tuesday. And then I realized just how sad my life had become, that I was just waiting for next Tuesday, that there was going to be a possibility that it was going to be +4 and not, you know, -20. And somebody has made the video to do it.
Oh,
and,
really?
It's called +1 in Canada. And it is exactly that conversation of two people freezing at home, and it's going to be +1 next Sunday in the 7-day forecast.
A mutual friend of ours put up on Facebook today, because obviously a lot of states in America have declared a state of emergency, and she's put this picture up with, up the top in Newfoundland in Canada, that's just your average walk to Tim Hortons to get your coffee and donut. But in America, it is a state of emergency, people. Stay indoors.
Oh, but my other video that I'm loving, I don't know if you've seen it, says, is the Sarah Palin, Donald Trump takeoff on Saturday Night Live. Have you seen it yet?
Oh, no, I haven't seen it yet, because Sarah Palin's now come out and endorsed Donald, hasn't she?
Yes, and it is an absolute cracker. So you can imagine Tina Fey is Sarah Palin, and she comes out and she is just Sarah Palin to a T, but she's absolutely nuts. Like, she's completely lost her marbles and she's completely nuts. And at one stage, the guy who's playing Donald Trump turns to look at the camera, because of course the big thing was he's done the whole "I'm religious now," because he's been speaking to the conservatives, and he looks at the camera and says, "She's 2 Corinthians short of a Bible."
It is a scary day if he wins this. It's really scary that a man who is saying all of this stuff is being taken seriously. I still have a conspiracy theory that the Democrats are paying him to do this so they win. Because I just cannot understand how this can be real life.
I know, it's crazy. All right, Sez, well, that's us for today. We're all done.
Yes.
And we'll be back again next week.
I'm going back through the Facebook comments to see where everyone has bought houses, and I'm going to spend the afternoon on real estate websites.
Oh, yes. Next week, what are we talking about next week?
Next week is how to make the most out of your air miles, which I'm going to learn a lot, because there's apparently so many tips and tricks, but we don't do any of that. I mean, Matt had air miles that were expiring a couple of weeks ago, and he couldn't get an upgrade on one flight, so he bought Sadie some Lego and I got some perfume. So yeah, we need to learn a bit more. and I got a big bag of chocolate. So we need to learn more about how to use our air miles. So if anyone's got some tips about what they do, let us know.
Okay, so next week we're talking about air miles. Okay, Sez, have a great week. And I'll talk to you next week.
Bye, everyone.
Bye.